Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by our fine sponsors, American Tourist Travel, Scooter Vacations, or David's Vacation Club Rental. You can contact any of our fine sponsors at our website at www.mainstreetmemories.com. And now on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. I'm joined by always with my good buddy, Dan. How you doing, Dan?
Good, Doug. How you doing tonight?
Very good. And we got an extra bar stool here tonight. We got our good buddy, Bob Sicken from It's All in WDW. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing good. We're sitting here where you told us you're buying us margaritas tonight and talking food and wine.
I'll buy you margaritas. I'll even make you frozen margaritas if you'd like.
It sounds wonderful to me. So Bob started a site. It's all in Walt Disney World. It's all in WDW. You can see his site on our – if you go over to our website and you can click on the little picture and go to his website. He has some wonderful menus up from the new food and wine this year for 2014 already. He did his homework and got everything in. And he's an expert on food and wine. Would you say, Dan?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was lucky enough to meet Bob and his wife down in Disney World in Epcot during the – we were there for what, Flower and Garden? Was that what it was, Bob?
Yes, Flower and Garden Festival.
Right, or Flower and – what do you call it? Flower and Food or one of the – we combine the names.
Yeah, I actually call it the Food and Garden Festival. As big a fan of food and wine as I am, it just made sense that the only reason I was going back to Flower and Garden was for Food and Garden.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that's a great festival as well, but now that they've added the food element to it, it makes it even more appetizing, no pun intended.
Yeah, well, Bob's site also does these wonderful little surveys. He's always having surveys on food, which I really enjoy. But there's one little thing I was surprised at, Bob. I was surprised. I was telling Dennis that the Canadian popcorn stand didn't beat the Liberty Inn.
Yeah, we are running Epcot quick service right now. Basically, I'm all in WDW. What I've tried to do in keeping myself connected with Walt Disney World, you know, during those times where I'm not fortunate enough to be down in Orlando, is try to put some things out there for the fans that you know, some fun things to keep them connected as well. And outside of some of the coverage we do for the different food festivals or different restaurants with dining reviews, et cetera, I do post or run some polls to identify not only our favorite table services, quick services, et cetera, but really a top 10 or a top 15 list for those different categories. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I mean, you're pretty wired into the Disney community. I'm sure you get emails and tweets and Facebook posts all the time asking you for your opinion. Hey, where should I make an ADR? Or, you know, what attraction should I focus on going on in Epcot, for instance? The reason that I created the top 10s and top 15 lists were to give an easy answer to people to go to and say, hey, if I'm going to do something in Epcot, these are the 10 things I want to do.
Well, we do them all the time. I can't wait to see when they come out. I love doing the little list, the surveys. And that's the number one thing I get with being a travel agent is after we book the trip, is where to eat, where to go, what do you think's worth it, what do you think's not worth it. And I know if you listen to the show, you know what a big fan I am of the Liberty Inn.
Define the cuisine.
It was amazing to see really some of the response on that particular survey because, for instance, Electric Umbrella didn't do anywhere near as well or hasn't been doing anywhere near as well as I would have expected it to do. And so it's been interesting to see. There's some clear front runners on that poll, and it's going to end up running for another 2 days. We'll have our final 8 tomorrow and final 4 the day after that.
My vote is I think it's going to be Sunshine Seasons for the winter.
Sunshine Seasons is is definitely one of the strongest contenders, and would point out this is the second year we're running the Epcot Quick Service Poll. It is the defending champion.
It should be. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with Sunshine Seasons. I mean, it has such a vast array of food. It's got something for everyone, and I think that's what draws people to it. One, it's located right adjacent to probably the most popular attraction in Epcot, if not
Living
Disney
with the
World.
Land. Living with the Land?
Yeah, right. Living with the Land. With Soarin'. So I think part of that is it draws in massive crowds. But not only that, but like I said, they have everything from sandwiches to pastries. And even a finicky eater or a picky eater can certainly, I would think, find something that's palatable to them to have to eat. So I think that's what it has going for it. And it is good. I mean, it isn't fine dining by any stretch, but it's certainly edible. But, it is a shame, though, on the other hand, that some of the other offerings around Epcot that are more specific to the country that they're in get pushed by the wayside because they tend to be singularly focused on a particular type of food, if you will.
Yeah, I love this. Have you ever had the salmon, either one of you, at Sunshine Seasons?
I have not. I've eaten at Sunshine Seasons a ton of times, but I haven't had the salmon.
It's actually very, very good. Me and the wife will actually split it sometimes just to give us a little protein to get us through the day, and it's very good. I highly recommend it for a counter service. We tried it one time as a joke because we said getting salmon counter service. It was like one of the first years we were down there, and we were shocked with how good it was.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Doug. It's almost like, getting sushi in a gas station or something,
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know about that.
But it was really, really good. And what's your thought on the Liberty Inn, Bob, before we move on to food and wine, which we talked about?
I have to be honest with you, Doug. I've never eaten at the Liberty Inn.
Well, you are a lucky, lucky man. That's all I can say. I've eaten there like five times, and I've hated it every single time. It's a shame.
It's time to try the UK fish stand.
I've tried them all. That's awesome. I love their fish and chips over there. Very good.
I do as well. In fact, today's post, I have a picture of a nice plate of fish and chips that my wife and I shared some months ago. And when I posted it this morning, I looked at it and said, boy, am I hungry.
Absolutely. So do you guys are ready to get started here?
Yeah, let's get 2014 food and wine underway.
So we'll start off with, at the beginning here with his list of menus, which everything looks great to me right about now. I'm glad I ate first. So is there anything this year that really jumps out at you to start with that you're excited about, Bob?
From a summary view, I think in comparison to last year at least, the things that I noticed in the menus were that a lot of the booths, the marketplaces, are coming back this year with the same menu that they had last year. There are a few marketplaces that have taken a recipe and maybe and it appears from the description tweaked it a little bit. Yeah, and in some cases I'm happy with that, some cases I'm not. For instance, one of my favorite dishes is Italy's ravioli, and it was one of those things that the very first time I had it, and maybe it was because of the setting the first time that I had it, but we were sitting there waiting for illuminations to start. I had this little dish of ravioli. I had a little glass of wine from Tutto Gusto, and we were waiting for the fireworks show to start. It was just, it tasted so good. It was a nice sort of a creamy meat sauce, like a bolognese. They seem to have changed the menu a little bit this year, or at least the recipe a little bit here. It's described more as what sounds like a standard cheese ravioli with tomato sauce, mozzarella, parmesan, and basil. I'll be interested to see if it's as good. From a standpoint of what stands out to me, there's a lot of change with regard to some of the marketplaces. Things like China, for instance, is serving up four items. Honestly, China sometimes, from our experience, struggles a little bit with the two or three items that it has. I'll be interested to see how they do with four items. But there's some interesting new things that they're offering, and then there's some really, really good standards, existing items that
old
they're serving.
Standby.
Yeah, exactly, like Le Cellier's beef filet at Canada. Yeah, the cheddar cheese soup is still there. The grilled lamb chop with mint pesto and potato crunchies in Australia. One of the items that my wife would have just been very sad to see go was a crispy pork belly with black beans at Brazil. They have that coming back. Really, it's kind of a mixture, new and old. I think it's going to be a great festival.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorites from last year that I vividly remember was the lobster and seafood fisherman's pie over in Ireland as well. And, you know, I think they kind of don't even care if I get on an attraction. I mean, I enjoy just taking in all of the different kiosks. And I know last year when we went, we did a couple of the seminars, a wine seminar, and we also did a Kat Cora was given a presentation on, it was a lamb slider that we saw her prepare, and we got to try as part of that. So, I mean, it can be totally immersive in that you can, you know, just with your pocket mission, enjoy the different kiosks, but you can also, if you're a real foodie, you can, you know, pay extra and participate in these different seminars and dinners and celebrity chefs that they have going there. So it's really a big deal now. And I know, Bob, that you just recently returned. Did you go to the Food and Wine? Was that in Atlanta you went to? That
we did. A friend of mine and I went. We had a group that was going to be actually coming in from out of town, and that ended up falling through. But it was completely different from Epcot Food and Wine. As crazy as Epcot's event can get, especially
right.
as you note, Dennis, it's a local type thing.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I would give as a piece of advice to anybody who's going down to Orlando from out of state is if you're going to go to Food and Wine, try to get there for lunch at 11 a.m. if you want to avoid some of the craziness of the crowds, especially if it's on a Friday or a Saturday. Friday or Saturday night is just off the charts as far as crowds and activity. The Atlanta Food and Wine Festival was like a Friday or Saturday night at Epcot times 10. And it was that from start to finish.
Yeah, I remember reading your post and seeing the pictures, and you seemed very disappointed, not in the food itself, but in the way they had it set up, and it was kind of a free-for-all. And well, the point I was trying to make to tie it in that, you know, this is Disney World and you know, Epcot, but it truly is probably one of the better food and wine offerings in the country, if not the world, as far as what's available and you know, who's there and all the food and stuff. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm sorry, Doug. Go
ahead. No, you're fine.
All right, from my standpoint, I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, in true Disney fashion, it's very organized. The crowds can get a little bit out of control, but it's more of a numbers thing than it is a fact that they can't handle the crowd. I mean, you got that many people on a Friday or Saturday night descending on the festival, it's going to get a little bit crazy.
Right.
But from a organization standpoint, they just do an outstanding job.
Well, go ahead, Doug.
No, what I was just going to say, what makes Epcot Food and Wine so special is it's the atmosphere and the way, like you were saying, the way it's set up, you never feel claustrophobic or tied in because there's so much going on. And it's such a vast area where, like, they have it down Atlantic City and the casinos and stuff like that in different areas, but you always feel like you can get claustrophobic with the crowds.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
go ahead, Bob.
Well, I'm sorry. I was going to say that's how Atlanta felt. I mean, we couldn't even move. From that standpoint, it was horrible. It was just wall-to-wall people.
Yeah, I remember the last couple of years, and I don't know if they're going to do it this year. And I think maybe you've been there, Bob, during this time. But they usually do a preview the day before the actual festival opens. And I've been down there twice for that. I just happened to be there for the Epic October. And it's kind of good because it's not, you know, officially one of the days for the food and wine in there. You know, the kiosks are just getting up and going, but they also want to get the chefs and the, I guess, the cooks that are helping the chefs kind of up to snuff, if you will, on how to prepare this food and all that. So you can, you know, you have the place to yourself almost. There's no lines. And, I was able to take advantage of, experiencing a lot of the different offerings without having to stand in line because if you go early enough, as we all know, even though it's fall up here in the Northeast and it can still be pretty warm down there in Florida at that time of year.
Yeah, well, this is how sharp my wife is. Last year for Food and Wine Festival, we were there the day before the official open, and we were hoping for a soft opening, the one you just described.
Right.
And that morning we got up, got a cup of coffee, and every cast member that she saw at the resort, and we were staying at the Boardwalk Inn,
right,
she asks, "Hey, what time is the Food and Wine Festival going to open today?"
Right.
And finally, one of them fessed up that, sometime afternoon, they're probably going to do a soft opening. Sure enough, we went over there right afternoon, and the marketplaces were open. So she actually did some advanced scouting work for me to get us over there early so that we could start posting some of the pictures of the food.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great opportunity. Like you said, they obviously don't advertise it, and if you ask them, they're probably not going to officially tell you, but they may wink and point in a direction and say, like they did to you, that, maybe after lunch or something. So that's a great tip for everybody.
Well, that's one of the best things about Food and Wine is just – it's so different than anywhere else down there. Like, experience in every booth, the crowds. If you go at certain times, during the week, the weekends, forget about it. Monday through Thursday, you can roam around and have a really good time and not have to worry about the locals being there, too. The crowds are different, which people need to know, too. The weekends are more crowded.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you're right, Doug. If you get down there, even a Sunday night sometimes is not too bad, but definitely Epcot, when we typically go for a week, we're definitely, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is days we target for food and wine in Epcot in particular.
Yeah, we usually do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We try to keep it right in the middle of the week there so nobody's making a 3 or 4 day weekend out of it.
Yeah, there's always those people.
And we even do, because we're thinking about this time, I'm supposed to be going down in a couple weeks, and we were thinking about maybe pushing it back to the 19th, but I don't think I'm going to be able to because my client's going to be waiting for her stuff, but we're debating it. But me and Brenda like to do food and wine when it isn't food and wine, and a lot of people don't even get that with Walt Disney World. That's what I love. Like you were saying, Dennis, it isn't about the ride. It isn't for us either. Some of our best memories at Disney World is just the different restaurants we've eaten at, different things we've tried. Like half of our stories are, remember when we had that the panini in the back lot at the Backlot Express? And we shared it, that and stuff like that. And me and her like to split meals all the time. And we make it into our own little food and wine, trying as many restaurants and counter services as we can.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough, opportunities to get stuff from each of the countries, counter service or, pretzels in Germany. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you can get. So, yeah, you could make your own little food and wine without
– we do it all the time.
Yeah, without committing to a full-on sit-down meal and still get a taste of the countries, if you will.
I mean, it's hard to you want to try to keep a mix, right, because – you get there seldom enough that you want to have some of the things that you really like, but you also want to try some new things. I mean, for instance, we've been to what we really feel, or what I feel, is one of the hidden treasures in Walt Disney World is Captain's Grill. And I would probably say if you pushed me to pick something, my absolute favorite meal in Walt Disney World is the braised beef short rib at Captain's Grill, served over a sweet corn risotto. It's just absolutely phenomenal. We don't get back there every time for me to have it, but I would say at least every other time we go there and have it, even though we've been there before. Now you mix that with something new, a restaurant you haven't tried before, perhaps. My son and I, on our last trip, just on a whim, because I hadn't been there yet, went to Splitsville. And he and I sat at the bar and we shared several sushi rolls. I mean, it was just phenomenal to try something new and, geez, to be in a bowling alley eating sushi.
That's what's wonderful about Disney World. Like Dennis will tell you, and I've talked on our show, and everybody, they're going to start calling me RC for Rose and Crown. But, like, have you ever had their bangers and mash?
I haven't had the bangers and mash, but almost every time we go there, I do have the fish and chips.
If you get a chance, do it at lunch, because they don't serve it at dinner no more, and it makes me very sad. But you have to try it. The sausage is out of this world. The whole plate. We actually got the recipe from the chef. And me and my wife will make it here like once every few months. It is an incredible meal. And it's one of those deals where it's a meal that's under $20 that you can't believe you're getting it at Walt Disney World. And this is where so many people, when they say it's expensive, there are a lot of really good meals if you just know where to eat.
Oh, there absolutely is. And you know, that's one of the reasons that I do the polls that I do, is because each one of those restaurants that get some measure of support from a standpoint of being a favorite of the readers that come to my site has something that stands out as far as a meal's concerned. You point out the bangers and mash at Rose and Crown. I mean, that's one of the things that I liked about what Epcot did with the Canada marketplace a couple years ago, is that they took the Le Cellier beef filet and they brought that out of the restaurant and put it into the marketplace. I mean, how many times, and, you know, Doug was kind enough, you guys talked about it on the show, and he was kind enough to write a review of his trip to Le Cellier.
That was Dennis.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doug. Dennis, that was Dennis. I apologize.
Okay. One of those D words.
Yeah, one of those Ds. But Dennis, on his solo trip a couple months back, wrote the review of Le Cellier. But regardless of what we feel from a standpoint of where Le Cellier is today in comparison to where it's been in the past, and, you know, the value proposition of what they charge for a meal, it's still a very popular restaurant, one that a lot of people can't get an ADR for and would really like to. But they get the opportunity, if they can, to come to Food and Wine, and they can taste what, at least personally, I think is their best menu item, the filet mignon with the the truffle butter sauce. Think about if the marketplace at Food and Wine for the United Kingdom would serve your bangers and mash. How often would you be back there to try it?
I would be there, but I'd be bringing a full size plate and give me like five of them, because that's how good it is. But you're right. I mean, that should be. I wish they would serve that. I even talked to the chef when we were there, telling him he should put it in the window. That sausage, or small platter, that should be in the window for takeout with the fish and chips.
That would be.
And I think it would sell big time there.
That'd be an excellent idea.
Yeah, but who am I? Have you tried it, Dan? I can't remember.
No,
have you ever had it? I keep trying to get you to. You told me the last two times you were going to, and you never did, right?
No, what it was, Doug, is I've been to Rose and Crown. I've eaten there a couple of times, never got the bangers and mash. And then when I was going to go there, we had a dinner ADR, and they had just taken it off the dinner menu. And then you said, well, you got to go for lunch now. I've just never gotten over there for lunch yet. But it's on my bucket list.
And believe me, Bob, it isn't like, I don't think it's the greatest. The food is incredible there, but what I love about the Rose and Crown so much is the value for what you get on all the property. I think the food value for how good it is, the atmosphere, everything else, the location. I think the bang for the buck is the absolute best at the Rose and Crown.
I can't argue with you at all. I mean, Rose and Crown is one of our favorites as well. We haven't been to the dining room in a number of years, but I can tell you that one of my wife's and I's favorite chilling spots is to sit in the pub, have Carl make us a drink, and sit there and just watch the people go by. If we're hungry, we'll maybe run out to Yorkshire and get a fish and chips and bring it in, or maybe even order at the bar. I mean, it's a great place to sit and chill. We really love it.
Yeah, so, actually, Doug. Actually, after I left you guys at Epcot that day when we were down there, I did go over to the Magic Kingdom. Then I went back to Epcot, and I had sent you a text, and you guys had already moved on. But that's exactly where I went. I was going to say, Doug, the last time I had lunch in the Rose and Crown, I ended up having a couple black and tans for lunch.
Good stuff.
It was good, and the atmosphere was great. The piano player there, I forget her name, was doing her thing, and it was
she's awesome. It's just a good time in there. It's so uplifting. Like that's the place I'd like to hang out there, and in downtown Disney at the Irish Bar. It's slipping my mind right now.
Raglan Road.
I mean, them two places. How much more fun can you have?
Oh yeah, the entertainment is just it's wonderful in a bar setting. That's for sure.
Well, to get back here to food and wine, I'm going to start asking you guys some of your standouts. So I'm going to go Africa, Australia, Belgium, and Brazil. The first four, what would you say one of your standouts would be out of them four kiosks?
Well, I wouldn't be able to get off this podcast alive without saying grilled lamb chop for my lovely wife in Australia and the crispy pork belly with black beans from Brazil. I mean, those are two outstanding dishes. She had them. One of the things that I do on the site, and you'll start seeing this roll out within the next couple weeks, and I'll make food and wine a couple month event on All in WDW. I do set a pre-festival top 25. I'll list out the top 25 dishes that I will try when we get down there for opening weekend, and then I'll come back and I'll post a final top 25 after I've tasted the dishes. I'll, rearrange things based on how the dish presented and how it tasted when I ate it. Just a fun little thing that I actually started doing in 2011. It's just the first time I published it, was in 2012. My wife does the same. She makes her own top 25 list. And last year, and I'll do it again this year, I dragged the readers with me through the excruciating process of taking the dozens and dozens of food and wine dishes and carving them down into a reader's top 25. Basically, same type of thing as my top 25 or top 15 attractions, my top 10s. As it were, as far as restaurants. Basically, if you're going to Food and Wine for the first time, what should I try? You can't try everything because there's literally 60, 70 items to try. Right. So we try to work it down to a more workable list and say, okay, within my tastes, this is what we would have. So I say all that because crispy pork belly and grilled lamb chop, very high on my wife's list. They were on my list, but not as high.
Me and Den, and Den knows, we've talked on this show. Me and my wife, we just can't eat lamb. For some reason, it isn't that we don't like it. I just can't eat. Mary had a little lamb. It's just something. I just can't do it, man. I can never order lamb because I want to get the lamb kebabs at Morocco. And she'll just look at me, and then I feel bad, and I see a little lamb running across the yard. I just can't eat it. And now, in these four restaurants, it would be the beef tenderloin at Africa and the garlic shrimp in Australia. That would be mine, too, that I'd be looking forward to having.
Did you get an opportunity to go last year and try that beef tenderloin in Africa?
No, I did not.
Okay, I'll tell you something. That was one of the ones where when I did write a review of the dish, I actually let my wife write it because she came up with the best line that I had heard her put forth of anything for Food and Wine. She said, "This doesn't taste like anything. It just tastes hot."
Okay, and then I wouldn't try it. I've had the garlic shrimp before, but I've never had the beef tenderloin. So,
yeah.
But that's something that jumps out at me that I would like to try. And the Belgian waffles with the berry compote with the whipped cream, of course.
Belgian waffles are always very, very popular. Last year was the first year that they served this potato and leek waffle with braised beef. Now, the recipe looks a little different. It's described as a beer braised beef for 2014. It was described a little bit differently in 2013. But I have to be honest with you, as good as the braised beef was, and I'm a huge braised beef fan, I almost wanted to taste the potato and leek waffle separately because I just wanted to taste what a potato and leek waffle would taste like.
You should have asked them. They would have did it for you.
They probably would have, but I didn't. We didn't go back to that.
Did you try that, Dan? I thought you did.
I don't think I had the leek waffle, but I think you're right, Bob. The braised beef beer. Braised beef, and that's going to be a heavier sauce, and it's full of flavor, or at least it should be. So you're right; it probably drowns out the leek taste. That's very subtle in the waffle, I would think, anyways.
Well, we're going to skip over Canada because all three of us love all three things. We've already spoke about Le Cellier. I mean, we all could apparently grab Canadian Molsons and just load up on the mushroom beef filet mignon and be happy. I know that. So if we go to China, desserts and champagne, farm fresh in France, what are some standouts in this area for you guys?
Go ahead, Bob.
All right. I was just gonna say from a China standpoint, the thing I'm really excited about. These steamed buns that they serve are very underrated. When I ran my polls with the readers last year, the Mongolian beef in a steamed bun did not do well because I think people haven't had the opportunity to try it. But if you can imagine a soft bun filled with a lot of tasty goodness, that's what you're going to get with this Mongolian beef. And frankly, last year, the Mongolian beef dish that China presented, I ranked as my number one dish out of my top 25. The recipe that they describe here with the chili mayo looks a little different than what they served last year. I'll be interested to see how it's different. But what I'm more excited about, and I'm not a tremendous duck fan, but they're serving a Beijing roasted duck in a steamed bun with a hoisin sauce, and I'm excited to try that.
Well, that was the one thing I was going to mention earlier when you were talking about China adding another entree to the menu. I was going to say the duck really scares me because I've had duck, and I don't know how well duck could be produced that much outside like that. I don't know. I'm scared of it. And I know you've had to have duck before, Bob, and it has to be cooked just right for it to be good.
I have had duck before, and I got to tell you, that Atlanta Food and Wine Festival that Dennis asked me about earlier, they had a dish there that was different from this, but it turned out being a duck dish. It was a thin piece of duck wrapped around a jalapeno that was stuffed with cream cheese, and that duck-wrapped jalapeno was wrapped with bacon.
Oh, boy.
And it was prepared outside. And that was so phenomenal. When we went back to try to get some more, the entire booth had shut down because they ran out of food.
But I'm just saying the consistency, I could see something like that being hard to keep the consistency up through the whole Food and Wine, if you get what I'm saying.
No, I do. And honestly, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that does bother me a bit about China is that they seem to struggle And it's a consistent thing for us. I could be just in the wrong place at the wrong time, but last couple festivals, whether it was Food and Wine or Food and Garden, China struggles a little bit in execution, not necessarily in the quality of food, but in the service of the food, the running of the registers. That marketplace just seems to have some trouble sometimes.
Well, what are you looking forward to in these days?
Yeah, I'm just looking at this, and I see that of the four we're talking about now, the desserts and champagne came up. And it's just a funny story. Bob asked me to help him out with taking some pictures and trying some of the entrees, or actually desserts, as it turned out, at Food and Flower, or whatever we're calling it. And I didn't realize it till he sent me a list and said, okay, you know, we didn't get a chance to try this and try this. And about 3-4 booths into it, I'm like, wow, these are all desserts. And then I didn't learn until later on that Bob says, well, we don't really have a sweet tooth, and we figured you could try them for us. So, you know, we got a chuckle out of that. So
you got to watch him Southerners, yeah, man. They'll set you up.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting that as we roll around to here, I'm left with the dessert champagne category. Nothing really jumps off the page at me there. The French France pavilion, I haven't tried, but I am going to try the escargot, because everybody that I've seen do a review on it has said nothing but great things about it, that regardless of what you think about, you know, that type of food, or, you know, you may have preconceptions, if you will, about it, it's supposed to be delicious. So I am definitely going to put that on my list of something to try when I get to the France kiosk this year. Have you had
their their braised short ribs are incredible.
Absolutely, and that's usually what I go for, and you know, I can easily say, you know, I'm going to get the short ribs and feel good about it. But again, now that, you know, some of these items are appearing year after year, I do want to expand my palate and try some of these different things, because, you know, in a way, that's the whole point of Food and Wine, to be able
absolutely
to experience different culinary delicacies from all over the world, and you know, try some things that you probably wouldn't drop $30-$40 on a full-on sit-down meal, but you might spend $5.95 to try something like that at one of the kiosks.
It goes back to that balance again, the one we were talking about a few minutes back, where we said you want to try some of the things you know you like, but you also want to try some things that are new. I mean, there's dishes that we've talked about already that, or that we haven't gotten to yet, that I would say these are going to be in my pre-festival top 25 for sure, because I just know they're good. The Mongolian beef, for example, you know, to Doug's point, the braised short ribs. As I mentioned, I'm a big braised short rib fan, so I know that those will be on my list. The escargot, the thing that is interesting to me about that dish this year is it's going to be a different dish than what France has served the last couple of years, and that dish has been popular with a lot of people. So it'll be interesting to see how well it succeeds.
Hmm. Well, that's the wonderful thing also of going with your better half, and you know all of our wives are our better halves. Like Brenda will make me – I don't turn down anything. I will try anything once. I'm not a fuddy-dud when it comes to trying food. I love trying new food. That's what I love about Food and Wine. But what I love is what I see on the menu, she sees it totally different than me all the time. We always like different things, but we always try each other's dishes, and that's what's so great about it, because she'll make me eat things that I would say, no, I'm not trying, and then I love it. What about you guys?
I 100% agree. In fact, one of the things that I did publish last year was my top 15 rules for taking on Food and Wine. And one of the rules, and it's actually my favorite, is that everyone's tastes are different. The whole reason I run the polls, whether it's restaurants or whether it's Food and Wine dishes, is everybody's tastes are different. I don't like mushrooms. If there's a mushroom in the dish, it's not likely going to be on my list, but a lot of people
mine's
love
an olive, right, yeah, then?
And I love olives. Everybody's tastes are different. And I love the conversation, like this conversation, that Food and Wine generates, because there's no wrong choice. there's just different choices all based on personal taste. And you know, I wrote that last year, 100% believe that. I mean, at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, my son last year, very first time he ever went to Food and Wine, first thing he wanted to try was the escargot.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And that, more power to them. I didn't want them, but Joseph, go ahead and eat them. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's
did
taste.
Did you nickname them Snail for the trip?
No. I don't think I would have survived that. but no, it could just goes to show you. I mean, everybody's tastes are different, and there's so many booths, so many different items here. You can't possibly not find something you wouldn't want to try.
Absolutely. The next four now, Germany, Greece, Hawaii, and hops and barley. What about, Dan, anything jump out to you?
Let's see here, hops and barley. What do they got for baked lobster Alfredo? That sounds pretty good to me. I don't recall that being on the menu. Was that on last year, Bob?
No, it wasn't. Actually, they served a griddled lobster tail.
That's right.
Last
I remember
year.
That. Yep. So, not knowing exactly what this is, Alfredo, is that a white sauce, I believe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
I'm imagining a baked lobster in an Alfredo sauce, but with some type of a pasta.
Yeah, maybe over a bed of pasta or something like that. But I'm trying to think, you're trying to figure out where they're going to get the flavor from, because lobster by itself is, you know, it's fairly, you know, it's not very flavorful, if you will, unless you're adding butter and stuff, good stuff like that to it. And Alfredo sauce tends to be a little on the bland side. So I'm just wondering how they're going to spice that up.
It's going to be interesting to see what that dish works out to be. And in fact, if you take a look at hops and barley there, it's a really interesting menu because it's got the grass-fed beef slider, which last year was served at the Florida local booth. And one of the things that's missing from this list of marketplaces is the cheese marketplace, which has been there the last
right.
several years. And you can see the artisan cheese plate is also being served by hops and barley. Hmm. When you take those three menu items together, the cheese plate, the lobster Alfredo, and the grass-fed beef slider, which my wife and I did not like last year, it was just presented very dry and overdone. I'm not a real big fan of hops and barley's menu this year.
Hmm. Well, that's not good going into it.
Well, I mean, from my standpoint, again, everybody's tastes are different. Right.
Right
so,
right.
I mean, I know a lot of people are a fan of the cheese plate, and that's great. But
right.
if again, it comes down to, and I tell people this all the time, you go to Food and Wine, you're not going to be able to buy each and every one of these dishes. You got to make, it's not just a taste choice, but it's actually an economic choice too, because these items don't come free, and if there's 60 of them, it's not likely that you're going to go there and you're going to buy every one of the 60.
Right.
Otherwise, you'd be spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars. You got to kind of work your list down to something that that you want to taste, but you also want to spend your money on. I mean, One of the marketplaces that, you know, in this group of four that we're talking about right now, that you know, if you've followed me for long or seen what I've read, I've got a little bit of a one-way feud with is Germany. I mean, they've been serving this same roast bratwurst in a pretzel roll and this same pasta gratin with ham and cheese for like three festivals running. Germany, where's the creativity? I mean,
they don't have much, man.
Evidently not.
Just the way it is. I mean, they're one of those things. They found something they like, and they're sticking with it.
And
I have to admit, though, it is good, though, the pretzel roll.
And it sells, I'm sure, and that's why they keep it. But
they're there for young kids that aren't too exploratory, and it's an old standby.
I've had it several times. Last year, we had it again. I swore I wasn't going to have it, but
you can't walk away from it, man.
I,
most guys can't walk away from a bratwurst and a pretzel.
I
come on,
but,
man.
But I had it
with
again.
A cold beer. I mean, it don't get much better than that. Plain and simple.
I swore I wasn't going to have it again. I had it again, and I looked at my wife and I said, "Yep, they got me again."
I bet you $10 you'll have one again this year. And I heard that the pork slider, everybody was real popular too last year from Hawaii.
Pork slider, actually, for me, in 2011, 2012, was my number one item in the entire festival. It actually even beat Le Cellier's Filet. And last year, I was really disappointed in it. It just seemed to not be as good as it was in 2011 and 2012. So it actually slipped down my list a little bit. I think it ended up at number four. But I'm excited to go. I'm excited that it's still there. I'm excited to go back and have it again because it is so good. I've actually even made it at home. They better step their game up because last year was a little bit off for me.
Well, I bet you that happens. That's what I was trying to say about the duck, too. It could have just been when you got it. It could have been a bad batch.
And I absolutely agree with you, Doug, but I went back and I had it three times.
Jesus.
Because I couldn't believe that it was as disappointing as it was the first time. And each time it was disappointing.
Because Dennis had that problem with the school bread. It was like he went over to get school bread last year, and he was like, what's his face? Goldilocks with the three bears. One day it was a little too cold, a little too hot, and one day it was just right.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that podcast we did, Bob, but have you had the school bread in Norway?
Oh, absolutely. Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. I have. It's fantastic.
Well, one night I was there just real quick, and I actually got a school bread, and it was jammed full of custard. It was probably one of the best school breads I've ever had, and I was surprised by how much custard was in it because I had had it, you know, a couple other times when I had gone there. It was so good, I said, you know what, I'm going to get one to go and have it for breakfast in the morning. So I bought one, you know, brought it back to the room, and I did. I had it for breakfast the next morning. So then a couple days go by, and my last night there, I stayed for Illuminations and the whole bit, and I ordered a school bread. My last one, I said, oh, I'm leaving. You know, this is one of my favorite desserts, and it was so disappointing because there was just like a dollop of custard in it, and it was dry on the inside, you know, and you know, Doug and I were kicking this around, and you know, he said, and it's true that, you know, depending on when you get it, and, you know, I even said, you know, I'm assuming different bakers may make the pastries on a certain day. Not that they make them there in the bakery, but wherever the big bakery is on property. I mean, just because you get something and it's, you know, not good or not as good as you would like, it doesn't necessarily mean it may not be better if you got it the next day or 2 days later.
There's a certain bakery around us that, there's 2 days during the week I won't get any of the food because I know who's in there.
Right.
And there's certain times I go, I know the bread's good, and when it's not. Or, you know, I mean, you just know by the time of the day how long it's been sitting and stuff like that. Let's move on to the next four. Ireland, Italy, Japan, and Mexico. Anything catch your eyes there, guys?
Yeah, I mean, for me, in Ireland, I mentioned this already, the lobster and seafood fisherman's pie, that's a standby for me. I don't know how many years they've had it, Bob. You can probably speak to this, but it's been at least 2 years that I can remember, and it may be longer. I love that. That, to me, that's one of the best dishes at the festival.
And Dennis is a seafood snob, man. I mean, when you talk seafood, I met your Red Lobster the other day, and I actually got a threatening message in the mail. He sent me one of those letters where it has all the different letters, like one of the crime letters that you try to figure out who sent it to you, but I knew it was him because he signed the back of it.
Well, I mean, he started out by saying, I went out for seafood to Red Lobster, and I said, well, that's your first problem right there.
I mean, my God, he's telling me about the clam box, and he goes, you can't talk seafood with this kid, so tread lightly here, Bob.
Okay, well, here's me treading lightly. Lobster and seafood's fisherman's pie is not one of my favorites.
Really? Okay. Do you like seafood, generally speaking?
Love seafood. Honestly, I've had this dish a number of times. I had it in 2011. I did not put it on my list in 2012 because I was disappointed in 2011. I tried it again in 2013. I just find the lobster and seafood filling underneath the mashed potatoes to be on the bland side. And I told my wife when I ate it, I said, it's good. I know it's very popular. It's got the lobster. I think it's got some scallop and shrimp in it. Bottom line is, I feel like it needs to be seasoned a little bit differently. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's the point I was kind of making earlier with the seafood. If you think about it, lobster by itself or scallops by themselves or any seafood, even a piece of cod or something like that, it's pretty flavorless. I mean, and then you got mashed potatoes that if, you know, they don't spice them up, you're right, that would tend to be a very bland dish. So, that, you know, it doesn't surprise me. But, you know, a lot of people, when they have seafood, they're looking to taste the flavors of the fish or the lobster and get the actual, you know, seafood taste, if you will, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. I mean, me and Brenda, we use all natural spices, and we cook a lot of seafood just flat out on the grill. And we love, but you got to get your food fresh. It has to be right. Like, you could buy a lobster tail 3 different days of the week, cook it the same way 3 times, and a lobster tail is so finicky that it don't taste the same 3 times in a row. Do you guys agree with me on that?
Well, we have the best lobster up here, so, I mean, I'm spoiled. It's always good.
But there's always – you can have 3 or 4 lobsters in a day, and they could all be fresh, but one will taste better than the other 3 every time. Because we eat a lot of seafood, and you could – it's the same thing with crabs. We get king crab and snow crab legs all the time. I throw them on the grill.
Right.
And we enjoy them every time, but every once out of every 5 or 6 times, there's one time that crab is so sweet and good. The other ones were fantastic, but there's always one time that is a cut above the rest.
Right.
If that makes sense to you guys.
I have to tell you, all this talk about seafood, you guys were almost talking me into moving north again. Except I don't want to move north again.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You don't want the snow, brother. I'll trade the food for the heat, man.
Well, I got to tell you, it's not been as hot down here this summer as it has been in past years, but
it hasn't really up here either.
Yeah,
it's been nice up here, too.
Yeah, I do not look forward to having any type of snow anymore in my life.
In Japan, have you ever had the salmon, shrimp, crab, and egg?
No, that's a first this year. That's
something I would like to have.
Now, see, that is something that I'm not sure that I'm going to put on my list because I have had seaweed salad, and I'm not a huge fan. The steamed bun filled with chicken, vegetables, and teriyaki sauce, like the 2 steamed buns that are being offered by China, I'm really attracted to that.
I would probably get that, and my wife would definitely get the salmon, the shrimp, the egg, and the salad.
But
and then we'd be splitting it up together.
But I was just going to say that. You pointed that out earlier, and that's what my wife and I do as well. I mean, if you buy all these different items, people will ask me sometimes, you eat all 25 of those things you put on your list? And I said, well, no, actually I don't. I buy all 25 of the things on my list. My wife and I share them. So I mean, it comes down to, again, this is a third thing, right? I mean, the things you want to try, the things you don't mind spending money on, and holy smokes, how much can you possibly eat? And really, to Dennis's point earlier, that's one of the reasons, probably one of the bigger reasons why we don't try the desserts is because by the time we get done eating the regular quote-unquote entree-type dishes, we just don't have any room for desserts. Can't eat that much.
Right, right. Yeah, and then you're just eating to eat, and you're not really enjoying it. And you're right. You got to pace yourself. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mentioned this earlier. I can't let us move on without talking about my ravioli. A lot of people ask me, where's your favorite spot for watching Illuminations? I mentioned it a little bit earlier. The ravioli at Food and Wine at an umbrella table with a glass of wine, waiting for the fireworks to start. That's like one of my favorite Illuminations moments of anything. Now you're not up by the rail. You can't see everything from fireworks.
I'm gonna have to put like a romantic love song on behind it as you're explaining it.
But that's actually one of my most favorite fireworks watching moments. And Italy, I'm putting you on notice right now. If you messed with my ravioli recipe, I am not gonna be pleased. And
we're going to see him on the 12 o'clock news.
I'm just telling you, Italy.
Well, actually, interesting. Let me just interject a point here. We didn't cover it, but it's kind of an overarching theme that we hear each and every food and wine season. What is your spin or your take on the lack of seating and tables and areas to actually sit down and enjoy your food? Because that, for me, is the most frustrating thing when you get in line and you might be getting a couple of plates, and if you get a couple of glasses of wine, and by the time you get your napkins and your plastic knives and forks, there's nothing more aggravating than looking around and there's not even a trash can to be had. Do you think that's something they can address, or they even want to address, or what are your thoughts on that, both Doug and Bob?
Well, I'll make it quick, and then you can go, Bob. I don't think they put the seating down and the areas down so they don't have to employ more people to clean it. They want you to be self-sufficient, eat it on the move, and throw it out and keep moving along to the next kiosk.
From my standpoint, I can see Dennis's point. I mean, could there be more tables? Yes, of course there could.
I agree with him with that, too, but I'm just saying the reason why I think they don't.
And that's a fair point. The way that my wife and I handle it is, and this was in my top 15 rules for taking on the festival, if you're in a party of two or more, one of you stand in line for food, one of you go seek a table. So her job's generally to go find the table. I stand in line, get the food, and then I meet up with her wherever she's found the table, and that's where we'll eat. A lot of times we'll share a table. You just walk.
Food and wine made me come up with the slogan that Disney World is the only place in the world that you will eat on a trash can.
Right.
Pretty much.
It is.
I have to admit, though, we've never violated that. we've always found a table somewhere. My wife is very – Dennis has met her. I mean, she's a very talkative lady. She'll walk up to somebody that has a table, and there's two people there, and she'll say, can we share your table? And generally they let her – take a spot by the table, and there we go.
Well, that's interesting.
But we've seen so many people eating at trash cans. It's incredible. And I don't blame them, because I've used it for – I've never eaten on them, but I've gotten my soda out of my bag. I set my camera bag on top. I wouldn't do that anywhere else but Disney World. I mean, I wouldn't even put anything of mine near a trash can around here. But there, I'll set my bag, my jacket, change my camera film out on top of it. But you'll watch people. I watched Lou Mangiello in a video. Him and his friends were all eating on top of the trash can at Epcot.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's done, and you're not the only one, Doug. I mean, you know, I guess if given that or nothing, people choose to do that. And, I mean, the bottom line is, you know, there's something between the food and the trash can. It's not like you're eating noodles off the top of the trash can. I mean, you do have a paper, a styrofoam.
But have you ever smelt one that really stinks?
No, at Disney World, I got to say, I haven't.
Exactly. I mean, I walk into the local Wawa some mornings and you could smell the can going in.
Right.
Or to get, you know,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Or Acme or whatever. You stand there to grab a cart.
Right.
You smell the can. I have never smelled a trash can dirty at Disney World.
No. Well, I think they fill up so quick. They're changing them out so often that they don't have time to. But back to your point about sharing a table, Bob, it's interesting because I vividly remember when we had that strong drink in China or wherever it was, you had gone to get some food, and I stayed back with your wife at the table. And she actually asked somebody asked to join us, a gentleman that was happened to be traveling, you know, there alone. And he stayed for a few minutes and ate what he had to eat, and then he left. But, I mean, you know, that's a great way to meet people and you know, share some experiences, and not something you might do in your normal day-to-day life at the local Starbucks or something like that. It's just, you know, another way to share the Disney magic, I guess, just meeting people and over, you know, food and wine. It's just an interesting philosophy.
Yeah, we've met just a ton of great people just sharing a table for 5 minutes at one of these festivals. And there are people that you're not going to see again probably in your life. But,
right.
You know, at the end of the day, you have a nice conversation. You're talking about some of the food you're eating. It's part of the you know, the beauty of the festival. Yeah.
Before we move on to the next couple, the sweet corn cheesecake, it's very good. Have you tried that, Bob?
I have not. Where have you had it at? Because I don't think it's been on. I don't know that they've...
I've had it around here before, and it's very, very – because I love corn, period. So I've tried it before. It is very good. If you guys get a chance, try it.
Sweet corn cheesecake. I'll put it on the bucket list.
I'll have you try that then when you're down there this year.
That's interesting. That's interesting because when she saw the menus for the first time, Mrs. All in WDW, she took a look at that and said, ooh, sweet corn cheesecake. And I would have never expected that out of her. I mean, we do like to have cheesecake from time to time, but I'd never heard of it with sweet corn. It's
very, very good. It's a different taste, but it's a really good taste. It's one of those things where you don't think it goes, but it goes so good. So try it.
Well, I'm actually, we're going to have to.
Okay.
Well, I guess we're going to have to try it then. I'll take your recommendation.
You can put it on the site as Doug's Sweet Corn Cheesecake, buddy.
I'm happy for you that it's on there, but I'm devastated that my rice pudding with cinnamon is gone. You may or may not remember, Doug, that was my favorite dessert of the whole festival last year, and that was the dessert offering that they had at Mexico, and it's gone.
I think this will let you forget about it. I feel bad for you, and I know you like your rice pudding, but try that instead. I think you're really going to like it.
All right.
And as you pass by, I'll get you a couple packs of it. You can go to the store and get yourself some packs of rice pudding and take with you.
It's not the same. These came in a tin ramekin almost, and they were ice cold. I mean, they were 33 degrees, I bet. And it was just on a hot day in Mexico there. It was just refreshing, and it was delicious. And I'm going to miss it this year, but...
Dennis loved them so much, he put the ramekins in his suitcase and got picked up and yelled at the airport for them.
Yeah, it was over 2 ounces of liquid, so they wouldn't let me on.
The next four, Morocco, New Zealand, Patagonia, and Poland. Anything jump out at you guys here?
Well, Patagonia is a new marketplace for this year. It's basically taking Argentina's place. And I think it's more or less because they've added this roasted Verlasso salmon dish. Because the beef empanada and the grilled beef skewer are what Argentina has traditionally served the last couple of years. I got to be honest with you, that grilled beef skewer, I did not like it in 2011, didn't try it in 2012, had it in 2013 and fell in love with it. It was outstanding, had it two times.
It's nice to see the gluten-free, too, that, you know, dietary needs. It's nice to have that stuff.
And if you look down the menus as they are on my site, you'll see, Doug, that there's a lot of them that are listed as gluten-free. And that's a first, too. I don't remember Disney showing that before. But I took the menus over and I reported them just as they came off the Walt Disney World website.
Yeah, I seen that myself, and that's why I wanted to mention it, to let people know that we are gluten-free friendly.
Yeah, I mean, that's becoming more and more mainstream now. And, you know, the Disney's always on the cutting edge of, you know, trying to meet guests' dietary needs. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That is good to see.
Yeah, I would look forward to trying that salmon, too. I hope you guys let me know how that is.
Yeah, I will try it. I'm looking at some of these. Get your input on this, Bob. Doug and I went round and round on this, and we talked about cilantro on one episode. You like it, good, bad, and different? What's your view on cilantro in seasoning or in dishes in general?
I'll leave it at this. I tried to use cilantro once. Don't use a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it's really overpowering because –
Absolutely.
One of the things that we do like to do, whether it's food and garden items or food and wine items, is my wife and I will like to try to recreate them in some form at home. And one of the things that we make, if we think back to Brazil for a minute, that crispy pork belly, I wasn't brave enough to try to make a pork belly. But what we did was we made pork tenderloin, and I served it like the crispy pork belly from Food and Wine here at Brazil, with some black beans, a salsa, and I put cilantro and I use too much. And it's a really, really overpowering thing, overpowering enough that when I look at the recipes here, if I see cilantro in it, I may actually stay away from it.
Me and Brent do all the time. We can't stand it either. It's too much. It's like, it like masks the taste of everything else.
Yeah, and you're right, Doug. And it's just one of those things. I had a similar experience to Bob's, earlier in my life, that I had a dish where it was just loaded on there. And I'm to the point now where if I even think I smell it or I see it prominently displayed on a food item or on the menu, I'll just stay away from it. It's just something I can't get over. And if I just even smell a little bit of it, it just totally turns me away from the dish. And as we discussed on our one of our other podcasts, Doug, for whatever reason, it seemed that the Food and Garden Festival this spring, a lot of the dishes, and I guess I get it because it's an herb, you know, a lot of them had cilantro in the dishes, and it made it so that I either didn't try, or there was one, I forget which one it was, I ended up basically throwing away, which was a shame because it was just overpowering in the dish.
I paused you. And Bob, the one thing I'm looking forward to is, have you ever had, I mean, I don't think you have because this is the first time I've ever seen it and I'd really like to try it, the venison sausage with pickled mushrooms and baby arugula?
Actually, they did have that last year, and my wife liked it. I was not a huge fan of it.
So you're not a fan of deer meat?
Well, it's not necessarily that, but it had a very strong taste.
And a little gamey?
Yeah, well, it was. So I was able to eat like one or two pieces, but it was one of those times where you say, okay, well, I tried it. It's not something I really, really like. And then my wife finished it.
Yeah, my aunt is one that, God rest her, God, you know, let her rest in peace. She could make venison where it was incredible. It would like fall off the bone and didn't have any gamey taste. It was absolutely, she basically ruined it for me. Except for the rare time I get it perfect, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, it's either good or bad to me. There's no in between. But when it's good, it's really a tender meat if you know how to cook it. If not, it's like boot leather.
Well, I mean, it was a typical sausage. It just was a very strong taste to me, and it wasn't something. Now, the lamb meatball at New Zealand, this will be the third year they have that.
Can't have lamb.
Yeah, you can't.
I can eat Bambi, but not a baby lamb. Figure that one out. I eat the old. It has to be the old buck. It lived 70 years. That's where I get my venison.
Well,
I won't eat Bambi either.
I've got personal knowledge that all of Disney's lamb meat is 20 years old.
Yeah. Okay. It's not that old. I think it's 60-year-old lamb.
Well, that all notwithstanding, lamb meatball is very, very good. That's one of our favorite items.
I've seen that posted a lot, like even tweeted out. People, you know, really think that's good.
Now, Bob, let me interject here. You'll recall from the Flower and Food Festival earlier in the year, they had, I don't know if you remember this, Doug was giving me, he was teasing me over this. I ran up to the kiosk and I got the what I thought was a sea scallop that they were offering in one of the booths. But what I failed to do was read the rest of the description. And remember they had the eggplant scallop in one of the booths this spring?
Yes, they did. That was horrible.
Okay. Yes. But, you know, Doug was kind of, you know, teasing me because I said, oh, you know, I love scallops and seafood and all that. So I'm looking in Scotland or at the Scotland menu, and they have the seared sea scallop with spinach, cheddar gratin, and crispy bacon. That looks good and sounds good to me. So that's something I'm really looking forward to, and it doesn't sound like it's eggplant.
That and the potato pancake sounds good.
I was just going to say the same thing, Doug. You're right on target there. The potato pancake with the Scottish salmon sounds really good, smoked salmon. The seared sea scallop, you put bacon together with a scallop and you got a winning dish as far as I'm concerned. The fact that you got a cheddar gratin with it as well,
right,
I'm really looking forward to that one.
Now, that's great.
We'd be tearing that off.
This year, Doug, Bob, that's new this year? That they didn't have that last year?
No. Actually, Scotland last year only had the vegetarian haggis, which they're serving again this year, sort of a grilled vegetable cake, and they had a salmon dish. The salmon dish is now being served by Patagonia. The seared sea scallop has moved from Brazil, I think, served that last year. But this is a different recipe, the sea scallop with the cheddar gratin and the crispy bacon, and I'm really looking forward to that. One of my absolute favorite appetizers of all time anywhere, no matter what restaurant I go to, is a bacon-wrapped scallop. Those are like candy to me. And to have a crispy bacon dish with a sea scallop, that should be outstanding.
That's one of those things in my wheelhouse. I could make scallops. I could go on any cooking show and go against any chef with my scallops. I am a world. I can make scallops. Like, my wife will go out to dinner all the time, and she'll tell me these ain't as good as yours.
Well,
I do them with the wrap, with the bacon and all, but I also do one that I marinate them in. A horseradish spicy mustard sauce. It has like 5 different mustards in it. You want to talk about good. They're incredible.
That does sound good.
I mean, all you're doing, Doug, is convincing me that I need to come over to your house for dinner. I mean, whether it's the scallops, you're talking about making fish earlier, I think even on the grill. I mean, I got to talk to you separate offline just so I can get all these recipes and instructions from you, because I can't make any of that stuff.
We do a flounder that I roll up with fresh crab meat in the middle. It's to die for.
Oh, please stop.
Now, speaking of something that's really to die for, I heard the Camachi dog was like one of the big time, stole some of the show last year too from South Korea.
The kimchi dog.
Yeah, it did. I didn't get a chance to go to the Food and Wine preview event this year. I had some family things going on. But last year, I did go, and that was actually something that surprised everybody. Just a plain dog with a spicy mustard sauce and some kimchi on the top. I've actually made what I really feel, I'm sure it's not the same recipe, but I've made a spicy slaw myself here with a spicy mustard and put it on regular hot dogs that I've made on the grill. It's just outstanding.
You should try that same thing, Bob. We do that with center cut pork chops and then put them on the grill with that slaw with the mustard sauce and let them cook on the grill. They come out ridiculously good.
Dennis, does he do this to you all the time?
No, he's usually telling me just drink water and keep going. You don't have time. No, I'm only kidding. No, we do talk about what we're grilling on the weekends and stuff now and again. I actually had that kimchi dog, and I would agree. It doesn't sound very not even appetizing, but it just seems like a very blah offering. But I recall my daughter and I split that, and we went back and got another one. It was so good. So that is definitely on my returning favorites list. I'll definitely be getting a kimchi dog this fall.
Now, the last one I want to bring up is, and that's in Tara, the crabless crab cake. Why would you call something a crab? Who would want a crabless crab cake?
Someone with a food allergy.
That's like having a hot dogless hot dog.
So I gotta tell you, I mean, I generally, this is Tara's, the vegan book. It does get a lot of criticism. I mean, to Dennis's point earlier, I mean, Disney does do a good job in trying to help meet a lot of the changing dietary needs of their guests. And this booth was introduced a year or two back. It's popular from the standpoint of meeting those dietary restrictions. I should go on record saying
you can't even talk about it right
now. First of all, I should say a crab cake. Crab cakes are one of my favorite things.
Absolutely.
Pepper slaw, Cajun remoulade, I'm sold.
Remoulade.
I'm sold, except for the crabless part. I mean, I did see pictures of it After the Food and Wine preview from a couple weeks ago, it looked very appetizing.
I bet you a few thousand people walk up after they've been handed too many margaritas by you, thinking they're going to get a crab cake because they don't see the crabless part.
That'll be me.
And they see the picture, and they're going to grab this crab cake, and they're going to bite it and say, "This is all filth." There's no crab.
But you know what, Doug? That's interesting because, you know, I'm sure you've had crab cakes, you know, all over the place. And, you know, I've been down to Baltimore and areas like that. And you'd be surprised how many times you get a crab cake and there's very little to no crab meat in it. It's all
absolutely
just bread stuffing and breadcrumbs and some spices.
That's why I made the joke.
Exactly.
You never see – it's like has a few little – tiny slim pieces of
right.
crab that's floating through the thing, and it's all stuffed.
They waved a crab leg over the top of the bowl when they were mixing the bread and the breadcrumbs and stuff in there.
Exactly. It's like them Mrs. Paul's that you get from the frozen food store. You know, they're 90% filling,
right.
10% crab.
Right.
And that's what this crab cake's going to be. You're going to be moseying on along and see a whole crab cake. Let's get a crab
yep.
cake. It's not going to be a crab cake. It's going to be the most fooled entree on the whole out of all the ones on the list this year.
I'm definitely going to try it just to see what it's all about.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. I may have to try it just to see if it can live up to the other dishes in the festival. You know, before we move on, I got to say that I got to come back to Singapore. You know, I kind of ran down Germany a little bit earlier for not changing their menu. Singapore takes a lot of criticism. The seared mai mai with jasmine rice and Singa sauce, this will be the third year that they're serving that. It was one of my favorite items in the entire festival last year. The fish was cooked perfectly. The taste of the sauce and the rice was just outstanding. The lemongrass chicken curry was not so outstanding. The fact that Singapore has stayed with the same exact menu that they had last year is a disappointment to me. I think they should have been able to step it up a little bit.
You wish they put a Singapore sling on the menu.
You
could drink that to forget about the rest of the menu.
Yeah, they have the Singapore sling. I had two of them last year. I'm really sorry I did.
Yeah. But now I'm excited about this year. I like it because there is quite a few different things on there. I'm happy, like we talked about earlier, that they are doing the gluten free. It's nice to see that, you know, the progressiveness of Disney. And what we're going to do is, Bob, after you and Dennis go down, we would like to have you back on the show to do a review of Food and Wine.
I would be honored to do that. I really appreciate you guys having me on the show tonight. I mean, it's going to be exciting. Couple months leading up to the festival opening in mid-September. We're going to be doing a lot of things on All in WDW, up to and including asking the readers to vote on what they feel will be their favorite items from this list of menus that we've just been talking about. A lot of people look at it and say, well, geez, it's kind of hard for me to choose this item over this item without having seen it or tasted it. What I tell people is you see the description, you know the types of things you like, you can tell whether I'd rather try this or rather try this. Because at the end of the day, when you go to Food and Wine, you're not going to try 60 or 70 different items. You're going to try maybe a dozen. What are the dozen that you really want to try? So we'll start running those polls within the next couple weeks or so. And really between now and Food and Wine, a majority of what I'll do will be Food and Wine related.
Well, how about we do this? We try to pull our little forces together here. And Dan is definitely going down doing Food and Wine, and you're definitely going down doing Food and Wine. So why don't we pick out before you guys go? We'll update it on the show. We'll give you each five items that you both have to try to add to the list.
That's fine, but yeah, that's great. I'm happy. Like I said, I'm honored to be on the show. I'd be happy to do that. What I'll be working on and really kind of in the background have already started working on is building my pre-festival top 25. Generally don't unveil that until right before the festival starts, but little pieces of that along the way, I might, you know, I'd be happy to spell out to your listeners.
Well, what we'll do is we'll go over something that you guys definitely don't have to have, because you have your favorites, and we'll each pick five that each of you guys didn't think you were going to try or wouldn't try, but you're going to try it for the show, and then we'll review it on the podcast.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a great idea, and that's, like I was saying earlier, that's a way to kind of force yourself to try some things, and I guarantee you out of those five, there'll be at least a couple that we're going to be thankful that you put us up to the task, Doug, because we're going to say, I was shocked that it was that good.
I'm telling you right now, the sweet corn cheesecake. You guys are both going to want to buy me a piece next time you're around.
I think it's going to be the crabless crab cake myself.
No, I'm not buying it.
And the other thing I was going to say is I just appreciate all the work you do, Bob. I mean, Doug was yelling at me a couple of weeks ago because I was praising Disney for releasing information about this year's Food and Wine, because I knew I was going, and I'm like, this is great. They're already talking about Food and Wine, and they're talking about Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party. I said, my trip's almost here, and he was yelling, saying, the snow just stopped here a couple of weeks ago. Let's enjoy the summer, you know. So, but in all seriousness, I do appreciate the little nuggets of information you put out just to keep everybody, you know, focused on Food and Wine and looking forward to those fall trips that we have planned.
I mean, all in WDW is all about the same thing that it was for me personally, and that is keeping you connected to Walt Disney World when you're not fortunate enough to be there. So, you know, whether it's polls, trivia questions, festival activities, and I call it frivolity, or dining reviews, you know, the readers' favorites. I mean, it's all things just for people to be able to spend, you know, a couple of minutes each day to say, you know, okay, how can I think about Walt Disney World today? Come to All in WDW, see what I got going on. There's going to be a lot of food and wine going on over the next couple months. I'm really excited about running the polls again for the readers to pick their top 25 food and wine items. I think everybody had fun. I got a lot of good feedback from the standpoint of, geez, this is excruciating. Well, when you got 61 or 62 food items and you got to cut it down to a list of 25, let me tell you have to have a really sharp knife, and a lot of things you might want to try just plain can't end up making a list. So I try to make it fun. That's the whole reason I do this, is so that all of us can stay connected, while we're, back at home, back at our jobs, doing our everyday thing, looking forward to that next trip to Orlando.
Well, that's why me and Dennis started this podcast, because our wives got tired of hearing us talk about Disney all the time, and we wanted to get out there. We wanted to be out there. We love talking about it. And when we can't be there, it's nice to have this hour or so that we talk about every week. It kind of makes you forget about all your troubles and other problems and just let you enjoy it. And that's what Disney World's all about, to make you happy. And that's why we enjoy doing this. And your website, It's All in WDW, is awesome. And I enjoy it. And my favorite part, your articles are great and all. And I do love the polls. And I like to, and it's weird with me, I'm always at the other end of most of them. What I like is not always what the majority likes.
I think did you guys have a conversation over the it was off kilter at one point last year when I ran a poll?
We've talked about that many times.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think so. From a standpoint of your guys' support, I really appreciate it as well. I mean, you know, Doug, you've been a big supporter. Dennis has been a huge supporter as well. I mean, he's He's almost there. I think I sometimes wonder if he's waiting for me to post something in the morning so he can retweet it.
Well, I
really, really appreciate the support. It's just it's just phenomenal, and I'm very humbled by it.
Well,
you're a friend of the show, as we say up here in Northeast. You're a friend of the family.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Bob.
And I was going to say, you guys are friends of all in WDW. I really am pleased and honored to know you guys.
Well, that's great, and you can be our food correspondent. That would be awesome. And like I said, during the week when you take a day off now and again, I know you say you travel for your job sometimes. It throws my whole day off. I'm like, where's the poll? What do you know? Where is he? You know, it's 5:45, and I don't have a post yet. So that I do enjoy starting my day off like that. And like I said, we don't mind giving you the support, because what you're doing is quality work, and I can tell it's a labor of love for you because you put so much into it.
I try, and I thank you again very much. I really appreciate your guys' support.
Well, that's going to be it. It's last call this week. We put our napkins on top of our margarita glasses. We're all going to call a cab.
Yeah.
Last one off the stool pays.
Uh-oh.
I'm going.
I'll tell you what. I'll pay if I can get some of those scallops.
Oh,
absolutely. I'll set them overnight with dry ice, buddy. All you got to do is heat them up.
There you go.
All right, guys, that's it. Don't forget to check out It's All in WDW, our good friend Bob. We really enjoyed having you on the show. I even enjoyed having you again, Dan.
Oh, you're going to have me back next week or no?
I hope so, buddy. It's been great. It's been fun. Don't forget to check out all of our sponsors, and it's been a good time, and we'll talk to you real soon. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Well, that's going to be it, guys. Me and Den's going to hop off our stools. It was another fun day of talking Disney with you. And don't forget our sponsors, American Tourist Travel, Scooter Vacations, and David's Vacation Club Rentals. If you need to find any of our fine sponsors, hop on our website at www.mainstreetmemories.com. And again, thanks for joining us, and talk to you real soon.
That's the start. He follows his dream with mind and heart. And when it becomes a reality, it's a dream come true for you and me. So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of